The reason you have a property manager is to provide that EQ of these challenging situations that happen when a tenant is not paying rent, when a maintenance request gets really complex and there's multiple parties involved. That's where I really think you shouldn't be using AI and you should be using humans. And I think the companies that will win in real estate are the ones that can distinguish between those and look at what is out there to really understand what should AI do and what is better left to humans.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dana Dunford. Now, Dana is the CEO of Hemlane, the top-notch tech-enabled property management platform empowering real estate investors to manage their properties from anywhere across the United States. She's also an advocate for purchasing rentals, not only in her backyard, but she also talks about purchasing across the country, and she has helped manage over 28,000 rentals nationwide. Now, previously, before starting Hemlane, she was with Apple and Nest. She brings a strategic mindset to real estate. Her background by MBA from Harvard, and an outside of her work, Dana is an avid equestrian skier and the first woman to win a calf dressing buckle belt buckle at the CA rodeo, which I'm going to be very interested to understand because I also have a bit of equestrian background. But Dana, without further ado, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks so much for having me, Reid.
I hope I didn't butcher that intro too much.
No, I loved it.
Just reading this intro, it's like you're a top achiever, right? MBA from Harvard. You have a tech background. You've started your own company. We were mentioning in the green room you have a son. You're a mother. So like, you know, before we even get into it, like, how do you do it all?
I think it's structure. And I also think it's a good team. I think with anything, who you work with in business is really important. And then who you marry is equally important. And so from that perspective, it was interesting. I didn't come from a family of entrepreneurs. My mom, a scientist, my dad, an engineer. But my husband came from a family of entrepreneurs. And as you know, when you're building your business, whether it's in real estate or something else, it's so chaotic. There's so many highs and lows with it. And so I think having my husband's family in entrepreneurship and him seeing what his parents went through, he was very much more amenable to the life of and being married to a entrepreneur.
Yeah, well, it sort of stems into my first question, which is now my second question. But, you know, rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So this is really funny because I made money, but I also lost money. I think the one thing I learned about it is really manage your P&L, how much revenue you have, but also what your expenses are. So back then we were actually living on the East Coast and spent summers out on Cape Cod because my mom, she was a professor. And so on during the summer, she could do research on Cape Cod. And I remember going to, it was called the Christmas Tree Shop. It's kind of like the dollar store, but better. And we went to the Christmas Tree Shop, which, by the way, you can go to the Christmas Tree Shop all year round. Okay. And my sisters and I got all sorts of things like lemonade and little toys and gadgets to sell. And we were so excited because we made $100 the first day selling it. But then we looked at the bottom line and noticed that we had spent $180 of, the goods that we were selling. And so that was a huge reflection to me of like, okay, when you sell something, make sure you sell it for more than you purchased it for. And so I actually think we went back to the Christmas tree shop, return some of the stuff that we could, but we still didn't make out ahead. So even though we made our first dollar, we also semi lost our first dollar.
Well, that's the first story on the show for over 10 years that someone actually was honest and, you know, lost a dollar. But it helps you, you know, perspective, right? You mentioned you're not from a family of entrepreneurs and you don't have that surrounded by you. So were you ever encouraged to go out and like earn a dollar, you know, pocket money or, you know, hey, mum and dad won't give you any pocket money unless you go and have a job or something like that? Like, were they trying to instill qualities in you that has helped you today?
Yeah, I think it's actually really interesting raising kids. Our kids are raised the same way. My parents were very hands off. Like, they weren't the helicopter parents. They had their own life and were going out. My mom she went into administration, so was always flying across the US and world for speaking events and her company. And so the nature of that was, like, I didn't get an allowance and they didn't have me. They weren't constantly on me about things. And so, like, I wanted a car when I was 16, when I turned 16. So I knew I just had to make money to do it. And so I think by the time I was 16, I saved $7,500 to buy my first Jeep. And, you know, a lot of my friends had never had jobs. And I just kind of built that up of working until I was 16. So I always had a job on the side. And a lot of those jobs made me really want to go to college because I didn't want to stay in those jobs. And so I think it was helpful. But from that perspective, I actually think it's really good if your parents don't give you the money, no matter how much they have, and they just make you work for it. Because I learned that at a really young age.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. As growing up in my household, I remember being 14 and a half, like, which is the legal age you can work in Australia, and, like, down at the local shops, like, writing the landline on a ripped out piece of newspaper saying, hey, call mum and dad if there's an opening here. And so I get it. It's such a great way to grow up, to understand the value of a dollar. And now as a father myself, I'm going to definitely instill that in my daughter. Let's now get into the nuts and bolts of the interview today. And, you know, walk us through pre-Hemlane in terms of what it is and your journey through tech entrepreneur, mm-hmm. because you've been with some pretty big companies. You're with Nest and with Apple. And now, you know, going out on your own to start your own tech company is not for the ill or faint hearted, I should say. So, like, where did it start? Why did you want to go out and do this and create a property management software?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I never actually thought I would become an entrepreneur. It was almost by mistake becoming an entrepreneur, because how it started was I was always asking why at work. Like, why do we do things this way? Why do we send out this report every week? I was probably the most obnoxious intern / employee that someone has ever had. But that helped me realize I like to build things and I like to change things. And those are two traits that every entrepreneur has. And then with that, I saw just problems in the industry of real estate. And so it started with my older sister. My older sister and her husband were investing in real estate. And I noticed that, hey, it's easy to buy the property. But then, and I was putting money into deals as well. But the hard part is actually managing them, because these properties are not in your backyard and there's not transparency. And so if you looked at the property management platforms out there, they were built for property managers and made it very uncollaborative with owners. And what I mean by that is, it's like the property manager has access to the portal. They have real-time analytics and data. And then the owner just gets owner statements once a month. That, you can imagine, for a type A person like me, causes so much anxiety. It was like, well, why don't I know on the second whether or not the tenant's paid? Why does it take 15 days to get the rent to me? And so, kind of fast forward to where we are today, one of our goals was to reinvent how people think about doing property management, and saying, hey, whether or not you have a manager or you are a manager, the portal should be seamless. It should be collaborative. It should be all in one. It should be transparent to the person who physically owns this asset, what is actually going on with the property. And then on top of that, I think when you look at property managers out there, there's 137,000 of them with an average of 3 employees. If you talk to all of them, they are overworked and underpaid, and they're always trying to build up their team. Like, I was talking to a PM the other day who we're partnering with, who, you know, every time he's trying to hire a repair coordinator, but he can't staff 24/7. There's certain things he couldn't do. And so for me, it was like, how do you offer that opportunity to be available 24/7 and give them the team they need with a consistent workflow and process? And so what we did was we launched the platform and then just continued to add services and what we call tech-enabled services, where it's any sort of virtual service that can help an owner or a property manager so they can manage their properties.
Gotcha. And you mentioned 3 employees. Are you dealing with, like, the sub 4 units range, you know, on the show where, you know, sub 4 units is residential, above 4 units is technically commercial. So is that the world you live in?
We do both. So we do anything up to most of our, so 78% of rental properties are under 20 units. Mm-hmm. So we do primarily under 20 units complexes, but just because that's the vast majority. But we find majority of our owners are with under 50 unit complexes.
Yep. So you're talking more of the coastal cities, so to speak, where there's you know, in Central Texas, there's just a ton of product over 100 units. So very interesting. I have been in this space for 10 years now, and I remember the coolest thing since sliced bread was getting your investor to sign by DocuSign, right? And today there is so much SaaS out there, and it's very difficult. I have problems with my own property management because I have different property managers across the country, right? And they use Yardi or Entrata or Appfolio. And I have people in India who are my analysts, and they go in and they download the documents, and they, from a T12 and a rent roll and a box score, they can produce me investor-facing reports. And there's just so much ambiguity in connecting all the dots. And when you don't have when you do have third party property management like we do, we don't have it in house, it makes it very hard and to sort of manage all the moving pieces and at a click of a button. And I will say that 5 years ago, this type of APIs and or KPIs was not around. And today it's, you know, it should be at a click of a button with AI being so you know, in our faces. So how much of that are you seeing as a massive opportunity to really like just professionalize such an archaic lack of software or lack of SaaS type of industry, particularly in the commercial real estate space?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I love that question. So first of all, just backing up to like what you said about having traditional managers, I think it's great. We work with traditional managers, but we also help with your bottom line, because once you have the property, all of your operating income is where you're able to really increase your cap rate. And so we really focus on that of how do we reduce the expenses of your property management, but have the property perform better. AI is such a hot topic, and I think it's actually done so incorrectly. And what I mean by that is a lot of people try to use AI for the wrong things, and then it does it incorrectly. And so when you think about AI and the different, how AI is functioning is you have this like matrix, and it's like high EQ, low EQ, top and bottom, and then low context, high context, like how much context you have. Anything in the low EQ section is basically what AI is great for. So let's just say problem solving. Problem solving, like a complex math problem, takes no EQ. Mm-hmm. And so you can go ahead and do that really easily with AI. But something like a maintenance request where there is a kid screaming in the background, it is below zero and they need heat. You really physically need a person on the phone to show that empathy, be able to relate to them and really drive things forward. And so when I see AI transforming the industry, I see it in everything administrative taking away, filling out your property listing, making sure it doesn't have any fair housing violations, responding to tenants, really simple questions of do you accept Section 8, making sure it's following all the fair housing and the laws, state and county specific, being able to schedule those showings and pre-qualified tenants, anything that is super structured, but or like scheduling a maintenance, they can go ahead and call and schedule that. But I think what's really interesting is some folks think AI will be able to like, you see it all the time in emails. You can tell when an email comes in and it's written by AI and it's not even thought of well, right? And I think having some of that EQ to be able to say, Reed, I empathize with you. I understand what's going on. that is where AI a bit fails. And so some of these more complex things, it's slightly more challenging to do. And so I think in property management, the reason you have a property manager is to provide that EQ of these challenging situations that happen when a tenant is not paying rent, when a maintenance request gets really complex and there's multiple parties involved. That's where I really think you shouldn't be using AI and you should be using humans. And I think the companies that will win in real estate are the ones that can distinguish between those and look at what is out there to really understand what should AI do and what is better left to humans. And unfortunately, I just see it done incorrectly too often.
Well, it's that funny meme that I think in Germany, it was like, hey, ChatGPT, come and build the rest of this building for us, right? Like, we're in the space of physical assets. Mm-hmm. And I just know from my tenant profile, more tan, blue collar, people want to your empathy point, people want someone to talk to about a problem, mm-hmm. or even like, go and have a quick chit chat when they're dropping off the rental check, right? It's a community, right? And so I think there's a whole vision of these, contactless renting, super urban, San Francisco and New York's and LA's of the world, or Tokyo's, where you don't interact with a human. It's nearly like a hotel. The reality is 95% of people live in existing properties and have existing issues with the AC or whatever. And ultimately, as humans, we want mano a mano contact. And sometimes that AI, it's going to, as you said, do a very small piece of the puzzle on a very long time scale because it is a physical asset. You need, if the water is busting through the ceiling, AI ain't going to fix it. You're going to need someone to come in with a plumber and get it done ASAP, and then figure out where that person's going to move for the next 2 days while they get the thing fixed and they don't have mold in their unit. So it's stuff like that I really think that people think AI is going to take over the world. Well, in our world, it's only going to take over small sections of it, like you mentioned, and it's going to become more of a tool than necessarily a replacement, so to speak.
Yeah. And I love that you brought that up of community, because when I was back at Apple, and this was, I'm dating myself, back in 2010, we thought of the same thing. Like, Apple was a tech company, but if you really think about what it did, it made it where you could FaceTime your mom at any time, who's across the world, and talk to her and feel like you had a much better connection than just a phone call. And so that's where I do think that people get technology wrong. And sometimes these engineering mindsets, like, they have a very low EQ. And so you have to remind them, people are people. You as an engineer may be totally comfortable with this, but majority are not. And so being able to balance that, to your point, is those are the companies and the apartments that are going to win.
Now let's pivot and talk about Hemline from a, where's it going, right? You've been in existence for how long now?
We started in 2015 building the tech, and then we took it to market in 2018.
Okay. And you're across 28,000 units today, correct?
Yep. 28,000 units that we're operating nationwide.
That's awesome. So where's the goal? Where do you want this thing to become over the next 10 years?
Yeah. So I think being the industry standard, what anyone thinks about, whether you're a manager or an owner to manage your properties, is definitely it. And I think that takes time, right? Because there's a lot of people who existing are ingrained into their processes. But if you look at those technologies, they're not developing as quickly. Everything from the AI to the customer experience to making it where it's such a delightful experience that mitigates risk. I mean, most of the property management software is out there that you've seen. We're built for property managers, where the property manager has been trained, has hundreds of years, not hundreds of years, but like 20 years of doing property management, and know, like, this is exactly what I do to mitigate risk. Our viewpoint is, hey, you don't have to know that. The system knows there's a streamlined process nationwide to be able to screen tenants, do the reference checks, this looks fishy, this and that, and be able to structure it. So even if you're a property manager and you have some sort of VA coming in, you have the right structure in place to know what you can and can't do. And and with the regulations changing so much, tenant landlord law, that's just needed because yep. there's always mistakes that are made. I think the reason property managers feel so burnt out is that they have to be there. If they're not there, who's going to pick up the phone calls, et cetera. And so us being able to just assist with that and say, we've got your back, we're here for you, we follow this very streamlined process, I think will help everyone operate much more efficiently. And our hope is that renters, it reduces that stigma associated with being a renter. I think a lot of renters feel like they're like second class citizens, but we're like, if you provide a great experience like Uber did, you know, pre-taxi, taxi was not a great experience, but Ubers are. And so like, if you have that sort of personal concierge for them, very similar to like a personal chauffeur, you can provide such a better experience and make your tenants happier. And then you win as well on your bottom line. And I don't think that those two are mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, love it. Do you think you're, just because I'm coming from it from the big picture, like we have 4,800 units in our portfolio and you know, four different property management softwares. Is Hemlane a addition to say like a Yardi or an AppFolio or an Intrada, or it wants to become one of the big players in that space?
It would replace those. So we've been very much of, hey, you can use both. A lot of times folks will move their showings and they're finding and placing tenant over from AppFolio and then fully transition everything over. But it would be a replacement. And here's why. I think the second you try to just do one like part of the puzzle and integrate into those, you don't do anything well because everything's not talking to each other. And so our viewpoint is we have to own it all in order to provide that seamless, perfect experience for our customers.
Love it. Love it. Well, look, I'm very much looking forward to seeing how you guys keep growing over the next 10 years. I my engineer brain myself, because I'm a civil engineer, but I do love the technology pieces of making my life better. And I think we're at a very interesting turning point in time where COVID has forced the commercial real estate industry, specifically multifamily, to come out of the dark ages and actually operate everything from leasing to identifying prospects, you know, and really providing an alternative, because I could bitch and moan on this show all day long about the apartments.com of the world, who are just, you know, the co-stars and they're the big behemoths in the room with all the data. But there's so many other cool little, you know, publicly accessed data that's out there right now that you can do exactly the same thing and, you know, attract exactly, you know, as good a tenant as you know, you can be. So I'm really excited to see the disruption that, software companies like yourself and others are doing, where before it was just like, the amount of times I have a property manager telling me, oh, let's just go get the platinumapartments.com, you know, package. And I'm like, no, that's not the answer. Like, you need to be like, it's just so like blind leading the blind. And it's like, you pay, you know, I do quarterly reviews of my ILSs to determine where an ILS internet, what is it, internet listing service, where I track where my lead is coming from and getting ahead in bed, and then what does that cost me on a monthly basis. And guess what, everyone listening to this show, apartments.com sucks.
You know, it's so funny you say that, because we see the same thing on our end, where we take all the leads, the cost per lead, but more importantly, the cost per qualified applicant, because so many of these listing websites will give you a ton of leads that are totally unqualified. Rubbish. And you're kind of wondering their process. And we can go back and renegotiate our contracts with them based on that, of just saying, hey, you're charging 10x the price of your competitor. And so I couldn't agree more. And I love that do that.
I've never taken to that next step. I definitely need to go beat them up. But there are some markets like that just go, like, I just heavy on the apartments.com or heavy on Zillow or heavy on whatever it is, Facebook Marketplace. But it's frustrating as an owner to have. And this is where software really comes in, to have the right data to be enabled to make the right decisions. Because at the end of the day, my property management company and the person who, you know, bless their soul, is on site, you know, fighting the good fight, they don't want to necessarily figure it out. I've got to go figure it out for them. And they're just using tools that they just know have worked in the past. So, but at the end of every show, we love to dive into the top five investing tips. You ready to get into it?
Yeah, great.
Question number one is, what's a daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
I think it's exercising. I have to work out to mentally be there. And so I go on a run or a bike ride every day.
Love it. No more equestrian sports?
No more equestrian. I do equestrian, but on weekends.
Gotcha. Yeah. Standing at the field, throwing the money away to the horse.
Exactly. I do it a much cheaper way by going to my parents' house.
Good. Question number two is, who's been the most influential person in your career to date?
It's probably my mother, in part because I saw what she did. She did it it seemed like it just came natural to her to be running companies, being around the world, and also being there for her children. And so I found that you can have it all, which I think a lot of women out there don't think you can have a career and children.
No, my wife is definitely one of those that, you know, kicking ass, taking names, but also trying to still raise the little ones. So kudos to your mum. Question number two is, what's been the most influential tool in your, and you can't say Hemlane, in your business, that, like, it could be a physical tool, like my notebook, right? I write everything down, or a phone that I call people on, or it could be a physical person, a team member, or it could be a piece of software that you just can't run the business without. What is it?
Mine's Boomerang. I am obsessed with Boomerang, in part because my email inbox goes to zero every evening, and I can Boomerang it and say, I need to follow up with this person. And then I don't have to check off. For those who don't know what Boomerang is, I could send Reed an email and say, hey, Reed, sorry, I can't make the show tomorrow. Can we do a week from that, tomorrow? And then I can say, remind me tomorrow morning if Reed doesn't reply. Mm-hmm. And then if Reed doesn't get it, I can be like, boom, I need to call him right away and get this scheduled. And so what happens is I don't have to go through and remember who to follow up with. And where it becomes really helpful is deals. Mm-hmm. Because when I invest in real estate, I will look at properties that have been on market for a long time. And I will contact that seller's agent, and then I will Boomerang it for a month and be like, oh, it's still on market. Hey, are you sure you didn't want to take that price? And I can't tell you how many times I've won deals and bids just based off that process, where it's like, I set it and forget it. Maybe it does go off market, but if it doesn't, it's right back in my inbox. And I can say, are you sure you don't want to give me that deal? And they're like, oh yeah, we will. And so I think from that perspective, that's helped me be really organized.
Love it. Boomerang is a awesome software, and it's also a tool that comes from Australia. So love it.
Oh, it does. Is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Indigenous Australians used it for hunting as a boomerang.
Okay.
Yeah. Question number four. In one sentence, what has been the biggest failure you have learned in your career, and what did you learn from that failure?
From failure, I would say, got a lot of failures for you. I think the biggest one is on the team side. If things seem too challenging, it means you don't have the right team in place, because a really strong team will figure out the answer or figure out how to pivot into something that's the answer. But if you don't, you get really burnt out. You feel like you're doing everything. And I failed multiple times in building the wrong team. And then realizing the product fails that we're trying to launch, or the operations breaks down. And so by saying, you know what, I just need to put rock stars in place here, it helps make my life easier every day.
No, I think that's so important when building a business. So thank you for that. Last question is, where can people reach you to continue the conversation? They'll be in your sphere. Where do they go?
You can go to Hemlane, HEMLANE.com, but I absolutely love my email because of Boomerang. So if you have any questions for me, you can reach out at Dana, DANA@Hemlane.com.
I want to thank you so much for jumping on today's show. I just want to reflect some of the things that I took away. I love what you said before about your mother being such an influence. I can tell by even from the introduction that you are very much a go-getter and, you know, never say die type of attitude. So freaking awesome. And I'm just curious about the software industry as a general and how it's really changed the way commercial real estate is operated over the last sort of 10 years, given how long I've been in the space. And it's really cutting edge. And I think you're doing the right thing by offering, you know, being that supply, you know, they talk about back in the day in the gold rush where, you know, the gold diggers would be buying the ropes and the shovels and the spade and the buckets. You know, that's what software today in commercial real estate is, in my mind. It's not it's not an untapped growth. It's still the gold mine, but you don't necessarily need to be going farming for that or gold mining for that. You can go and sell stuff to make the process easier. So did I leave anything out on that little summary there?
No, I think that's great. And I think that it does change your life if you do have some of those systems and tools in place.
100%. No, it 100% does. And I think the time is now when to maximize AI and all these different things. So thank you so much for jumping on today's show. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll chat very, very soon.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice from Dana. Please remember, if you do want to check out what Hemlane has got going on, head over to www.hemlane.com, I believe. And if you want to check, hit up Dana, hit up her at Dana, D-A-N-A, at hemlane.com. She'd be so interested to teach you a little bit more about what her property management software has got going on. It is revolutionizing the way in which we manage assets today. If you do love this show, the easiest way to give back is to give it a 5-star review on iTunes and share it with a friend, because that's how we grow the audience. And we're going to do this all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.